Welcome to another eBizQ podcast.
Hello, this is eBizQ's Peter Schoaf, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Peter Finger, an internationally recognized expert on business strategy, globalization, and business process management. Peter recently published the book, Business Innovation in the Cloud, Executing on Innovation with Cloud Computing, which is exactly what we're going to be speaking about today. So first of all, Peter, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure being here.
Now, in your book, I saw that you reference extreme competition. I think that makes every business person's ears perk up. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, actually, 6 years ago, I wrote a book called Extreme Competition, because at the time, I was really interested not in just our perspective from being here in the U.S., but I reached out to 12 colleagues from around the globe, from China, India, Australia, the Middle East, and so forth. And that was a learning experience. We talked about everything from extreme customers, now that the value's gone to customers. We talked about extreme innovation, extreme individuals. You know, who's this kid just the other day, 2 days ago, became a multi-billionaire with a single idea? So the idea of extreme competition has been on my mind for a number of years. But what Jim Steichleather, my co-author, and I wanted to do was to tease out and explore the variables that would be used to calculate the future. Because we all know there's all kinds of extreme change going on right now. And in my talks, I bring up a picture of a lady named Bessie Cooper. You may not know her, but she lives in Georgia. She's still alive, and she was 8 years old when the Wright brothers took off. Look at the change she's seen in her life. In 1981, I had an interview at the home of the guy who invented the electronic digital computer, John Vincent Adanasoff. I'm not that old, but I've seen a lot of change. But the kinds of change we've seen so far has been episodic. If you look at the mathematics of exponential growth, that's the era we're entering into in terms of the number of internet connections, in terms of the number of genes sequenced, the Internet of Things, the human population, which just topped 7 billion. So right now, there's a huge change. Change itself is changing. And that was one of the big motivations behind the book I did with Jim Steichleather that's just being released, is to investigate some of these variables to see what would lay the context. Because business can no longer do strategic planning as we did throughout the industrial age. It's now the ability to change rapidly. And so getting a handle on that bigger world, the changes set the context for how business has to change.
That makes a lot of sense. And change is certainly changing. Now, how do you make innovation a systematic and repeatable process?
Well, that's a very good question, because a lot of people think of innovation as some kind of magic or some gurus thrown into a room for a week to come out with some kind of gestalt. But what's interesting is Larry Keeley over at Dublin, the design firm in Chicago, he says that since innovation fails about 96% of the time, it seems self-evident the field has advanced to about the same state as medicine when leeches, liniments, and mystery potions were used as the sophisticated treatment of the day. And the idea, as far as bringing some kind of repeatable structure to innovation, is looking in three key areas. One is looking down at customer needs. That brings innovation from the outside in. You've got to get so close to your customers that you can anticipate their needs even before they do. Then you've got to go out and look at competitive patterns. If you look at things like tablets and smartphones, you better keep a close eye on how competition is changing, because you can never rest on your laurels. So taking those two perspectives and then looking deeply inside your company's own capabilities, then you can come up and start building a systematic business process for innovation. GE has such a process. It's called Syncor. The Mayo Clinic has one called Spark. There's many individual processes, but they all follow the same pattern. Over at PwC, they talk about the discovery phase, incubating, accelerating, and then scaling. If you look at Gartner, they've got generate ideas, evaluate and select, develop and implement. Well, all these are generic common sense approaches. But one of the keys to all of this is that new approach to strategic planning. Because the key word is going to be not just the word innovation, but agility. Because the outside world is changing. And there's a fellow named John Boyd, who was a fighter pilot trainer in the Air Force. And he developed a mathematical theory on energy maneuverability that then became what we call OODA loops. Observe, orient, design, and decide and act. Then repeat it. Observe, because when you act, it changes. So you repeat again. Observe, orient, decide, and act. And the whole notion of the math theory behind that was behind the design of the F-16 fighter pilot, which doesn't have the power, the range, the height, or the capacity, or the payload of a typical MiG. But an F-16 wins every time, because it was Boyd's theories of energy maneuverability that allows that plane to be the most agile plane in the world force of fighter craft. So what we're learning now is companies are just now starting to learn those formulas and applying John Boyd's theories of energy maneuverability into this whole notion of making innovation a systematic, repeatable business process.
Now let's turn our target towards the cloud. So how can cloud exactly help this process? And how would you say this is different from just standard innovation?
Well, standard innovation sounds like an oxymoron. No, the point is, first of all, there's no such thing as the cloud. What the cloud is, it's not a new technology, it's not a new methodology, it's not a new architecture, but what it really, really is a new delivery mechanism. It's global. It's the one. It's like a living organism, as Kevin Kelly would describe it. Well, I don't care if you have an iPhone, a laptop, whatever you have, you're looking at the one, and it's more like a living organism. So the way the cloud speeds things up is by creating a whole new level of collaboration, and not just collaboration at the talking phase, but process collaboration, research collaboration. Single companies don't invent stuff anymore. Procter & Gamble has its connect and develop. It's no longer a single R&D lab going from the inside out. It's from the outside in. And the average value chain has over 20 participants in it. So the cloud allows, if you want to create a new product, and we talk, for example, in the book about the sunglasses phone. You hear a lot now about the G phone, but the sunglasses phone is really it in our hypothetical example. So here's my company, and it goes out to Flextronics in Singapore, which is an original design manufacturing company, not an OEM, but an ODM, which has its sub-suppliers. Then Avero Supply Chain allows tier 3 and 4 suppliers to integrate into all this. While in the meantime, you're going out to various labs in Asia. All this is brought together in a community cloud with a firewall around it. It is with the same security level as you might have if you were doing all this inside of one enterprise. So what the cloud does is nothing new, except to the extent that allows companies to form virtual extended enterprises and come together and act as one company. And so that's where the real secret is, and it's not going to be the same. We talk in the book about the story of Stone Soup. Don't know if you know that old tale, but soldier coming back from a war is in his cart going through a village, and he wants to rest for the night, but there's also a famine. So he asked one of the villagers, "Can I stay here for the night?" And they said, "Oh no, we have no food." So he says, "Well, wait a minute." And he goes to his cart and pulls out a big, huge iron pot, lights a fire under it, throws some water, and puts a stone in it. Suddenly, people went to their hoards and came out with carrots. Someone else came out with cabbage. By blending all these secret resources together, the village had a feast that night. So we use the same metaphor in the book. We talk about the components that go into doing innovation in the cloud. We talk about some things that are kind of disturbing to management. One section is the end of management as we know it. We talk about casting a wide net with open innovation. We talk about social networks and how innovation as listening posts and persona management systems can infiltrate and learn from and contribute to social networks. We talk about the Deliberatorium up at MIT. What is that? Well, these social networks create so much noise. How do you actually build argumentation systems to make decisions and actually learn from the noise? So the other key thing is business processes themselves. Instead of your company being the 800-pound gorilla controlling an entire process, end-to-end process, it's going to be companies come together in this inner cloud, in this community cloud, and operate as a virtual enterprise. So one of the key challenges in all of this, I won't go over the rest. I mean, things like big data, we all know how important that is.
Right.
But one of the other key areas to drill down on is services innovation. You don't buy a drill. What you really want is a hole. The drill is just the product that delivers the service. So almost every product today is no longer a standalone product. It's a product plus the service. And the whole area of services innovation is going to be key going forward. You know, 100 years ago, our grandparents lived on a farm. 90% of employment was in farming. Then came the industrial age. Well, we applied science to farming, so now only 2% of the population is employed in farming. We applied science to industry. Now only 12% of the population is employed in industry making stuff. 80-some percent, especially in the U.S., is services. And there's a real bad guy up at IBM Research, Dr. Robert Morris, who's going to ruin our world. Because he wants to apply science to services. What happens then? We might all become unemployed. So that's the trend that's going on right now. And every company who knows what it's doing is pushing hard in the services area. In fact, one of the fun outcomes I like to use in my talks is that, wow, someone's got to buy this stuff. And Milton Friedman, the Chicago School of Economics, it's into no government and laissez-faire competition. He proposed at one point the NIT, the negative income tax. So our job in the future might be to receive income if we don't have a job so that we can go buy the stuff. So we will be paid to be consumers. The point is this stone soup has so many facets to it, including the final one. I don't want to go into everything. It's called the fractal company. I don't know if you're familiar with fractal geometry, but you can't model a cloud, you can't model a shoreline with linear geometry. And a guy named Mandelbrot, years ago at IBM Research Labs, developed what's called fractal geometry. So you're going to see a whole bunch of new enterprise architectural models built on fractal geometry. You're going to end up with fractal companies. And if you want to know more about that, just read the book.
Interesting. Now, what would you say the role of framework plays in all of this?
Well, it goes back to building some kind of structure. You know, what is a framework? The way we talk about it is to really take and build a framework for process, innovation processes. You've got to have foresight, and that's where you're going out looking at the trends, using listening posts and all sorts of ways of seeing what really the big trends are. Then you've got to use insight. In insight, basically you start looking at best practices, your own intellectual properties, your capabilities, and your competition. And you bring those together into a framework that also applies reference architectures. You know, in various industries, in telecommunications, there's ETOM. In supply chain, there's SCORE. So frameworks then sort of lay out what are the key major variables to manage. And all that comes into what I call the new agile extended enterprise architecture. We're not throwing away IT. We're still going to have transaction and back office. But the new pillars are going to be social networks, these demand supply chain business networks that I was describing. You're going to have distributed rules management. You're going to have next generation analytics, not the old BI, but the predictive analytics. Then capability management to balance the other column, which is innovation management. Because innovation can't be just given off to R&D. It's got to become a standard management practice. Just like managers and executives have certain practices in finance and operations, innovation itself must become a standard management practice. So frameworks then give you the context for putting all these components and elements together to make sense as far as an overall business architecture.
And that does make sense. Now, it seems like you've done a lot of thinking about this and you've already discussed the possibility of fractals. So what do you see for the future of cloud and innovation?
Well, I think the future, people hate change. You ain't going to change until you feel the pain. In fact, one of the better books out of Harvard on managing change was all about once you've been the least bit successful, you got to create a crisis. Well, guess what? We're nowhere short of crises these days, as we know just looking at the outside world. Think about it. Water, food, energy, healthcare, education, and even things like freedom. You know, look what the cloud did. It created the Arab Spring. Now there's talk about a management spring because our top-down command and control types of management no longer apply. So all of this ties together. We have serious challenges in the world. The population is 7 billion now, shooting to 9 to 10 billion by 2050. We've reached the limit of the physical resources. We have to have innovation, and we're not going to do it in some back office R&D lab. The cloud is where innovation is going to take place.
Absolutely fascinating, Peter. This is eBizQ's Peter Schoff speaking with Peter Finger. And anyone listening, please make sure you check out Business Innovation in the Cloud, Execution on Innovation with Cloud Computing. So thank you very much, Peter, for some excellent information.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
This has been an eBizQ podcast.